This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit Chevrolet.gm.ca.
Welcome to the Maritimes This Week. I'm Nina Corfu in Halifax. This week on the podcast, there's fat-free, sodium-free, and sugar-free, but can something like gassing up your SUV really be guilt-free? The investigation into the death of a Nova Scotia man who died after being tasered continues. We'll hear from Fredericton's chief of police about the use of the weapon in New Brunswick. And we'll hear how a PEI man's small Christmas gift to his relatives will help out a struggling beef farmer. But first, the lure of high-paying jobs has driven thousands of Nova Scotians westward in recent years, and the trend has left many employers in the province in a lurch. One Halifax hotel operator has found a solution to the worker shortage. The Prince George Hotel recently hired three room attendants from El Salvador. Margot Brunel went down to meet them and find out how they're settling in.
Hola.
Hello.
Hello, I am Margot.
I am Griselda. Mi nombre es Griselda Campos y vengo de El Salvador.
Bienvenido a Nueva Escocia.
Hello, my name is Esmeralda Gutierrez and I'm from El Salvador.
Why did you want to come here, Esmeralda?
Because I can explain. In El Salvador, it's very difficult, our life. For our family, it's better that we stay here because we can help them, because we send money. In my case, I want to help my mother. A good job, but when we came here, it was different. The people's very different, more polite. The page is very good.
The pay.
And when I talk with my mother, she tell me that she's happy, because this is one of my goals: travel to other country and work, help my mother.
Did you study English before you came?
Yeah.
You're doing very well.
Thank you very much.
Now, Griselda, why did you want to come to Canada?
Bueno, esto empezó, la verdad, tenía un sueño prácticamente trabajar en un país.
She say it's a her dream, working to another country, travel and help his family because she had three babies.
Tengo tres hijas que están en El Salvador con mi esposo y por un futuro mejor para ellas.
She left behind three babies?
Yeah, she left behind three babies and here's happened there.
How old are the children?
7 años, 9 años, 13 años.
7, 9, and 13?
Yes.
Years old? That must have been very difficult for her to leave her children behind, was it?
Que sea difícil dejar tus hijos allá.
Mucho. Ha sido muy difícil.
Very difficult.
So why was it important for her to come here?
¿Qué es lo importante para ti para venir acá?
Lo importante ha sido, bueno, pensando en ellas.
She wanted to bring a new future for his family, and it's very difficult. She's thinking every day.
Lo mejor.
She's thinking about her children all the time?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah. Esmeralda, what were you doing in El Salvador before you came here, before you got this job?
I was working in a hotel, quality hotel. It's a good hotel. It's a good hotel in El Salvador. But when I came here, I feel very well. I never worked housekeeping. I work in a kitchen. Uh-huh. But I like it. I like because I study food service or hostelería y turismo.
Mm-hmm.
¿Cómo se dice?
Hostelería y turismo.
And I like serve the guests.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm lo estoy poniendo en práctica.
Oh, she practicing.
She's practicing.
She practices, yeah.
I'm practicing my job.
Yeah, well, and you're practicing your English too.
Yeah, but sometimes difficult.
How much money are you able to send home, Griselda?
$300, $400.
$300, $400 every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks she sends back $300 or $400?
Yeah.
So that would make a huge difference in their family income.
Yeah.
Mucho, sí. Es bastante diferente.
And do you hope to bring them here one day? Would you like them all to move to Canada one day, or would you like to go home?
Que si a ti te gustaría traerlos a vivir a ellos para acá, o a ti te gustaría ir para allá.
Traerlos. Traerlos lo más pronto que se pueda.
He said, yeah, she can bring here, they'll be fine.
Yeah, she would like to bring them here.
Oh, yeah.
Me gusta mucho este país.
How about you, Esmeralda? Would you like to stay here or go back with more money in your pocket?
No, really, I would like to stay here. I would like to bring my family, my boyfriend, my grandma, and my grandpa, my grandfather. But I like here. For us, is a surprise that you are interested in us.
Well, we really need people, newcomers in Nova Scotia. That's why we're so happy that you've come.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias.
Venga nuestra familia.
That was Margot Brunel speaking with Griselda Campos and Esmeralda Gutierrez, two women from El Salvador who are now working as room attendants at the Prince George Hotel in Halifax. And special thanks to Enrique Ortez, who came from the Dominican Republic 2 years ago and works in the hotel kitchen. He helped translate their conversation. Margot also had a chance to speak with Carol Logan. She runs the hotel's human resources department and helped arrange the hiring of workers from El Salvador.
What advice would you have for other people in the hospitality business who are thinking of looking beyond their own border to hire workers they need?
My advice would be absolutely go for it, do it, plan, be prepared, and there is a commitment in doing it. It's making sure it's more than just recruiting somebody and having them come to your doorstep. It's fostering that relationship. It was a learning process for us, but it has exceeded our expectations, and it has definitely enhanced our culture. The staff made donations and contributions. We've had things from DVDs donated, toasters, furniture from a couple of the local hotels here in Halifax to ensure that they have the things they need. We made a trip out to Valley Village to get them some winter coats because of the climate. Right. When they left their country, it was 35 degrees. And then when they came here, it was a little shocking. So it's being able to get them out and introduce them to get the items that they need to. And I'd just like to take the opportunity to also thank how proud I am of the local community and how welcoming they have been. Everywhere that we went, from Service Canada to MISA to getting MSI numbers and even setting up their bank accounts and understanding how to transfer monies and how to use debit cards, Nova Scotia has really embraced this and has really shown what hospitality is all about in welcoming newcomers to our province. And we're hoping in the future we may find ourselves visiting El Salvador in order to recruit and bring more back.
Really?
We're looking for customer service. And as we know, it's a universal language to smile and greet somebody with your eye contact and your body language. And we felt that warmth and general feeling from these applicants when we interviewed them, and also understanding why they wanted to come here and do this position and how we were going to secure that. For example, in speaking with Griselda yesterday, I found out that today is her daughter's birthday, her seventh birthday. So we wanted to make sure that those moments aren't forgotten. Oh, gosh, now I'm going to get misty. But so we went to get a present for her so she could send it to her daughter so that we can ensure that relationship is maintained.
Christmas is going to be an emotional time, too, I bet.
It will be. And we started talking about it. How can we help make that a special time for them and celebrate, because they celebrate on the 24th as opposed to the 25th, and how can we ensure that we help them celebrate and still remember their families?
Well, good luck with it. Thanks very much for bringing me in and introducing me.
Thank you, Margot. We appreciate it.
Margot Brunel speaking with Carol Logan, Director of Human Resources at the Prince George Hotel in Halifax. You're listening to the Maritimes This Week. I'm Nina Corfu. Christmas is just around the corner, but the mood was anything but cheerful at a public forum on the crisis in agriculture in Charlottetown, PEI, recently. Livestock farmers are losing money on every animal they sell, and the high Canadian dollar isn't helping when it comes to exporting to the U.S. Here's what one man had to say about how he's going to give back to farmers this holiday season.
My name is Nigel Weaver. I'm a little surprised to find myself standing at the mic, but I'm here. I've lived on PEI for 2.5 years now, moved down from Toronto for a job. I was quite naive, I think, in retrospect. I believe that here consumers and farmers would know each other and would know what was going on. I simply wanted to share a story, a personal story. I'm not sure when you asked the farmers to stand. I, of course, didn't stand. Seated, it looked to me like there were almost as many of us seated as there were of you standing. And so I stand here now to tell you that those of us who were seated were standing with you and do stand with you. One of the things I also want to say is that the more that stands between us, be that big business, be that industrial agriculture, be that government, whatever, the more that stands between us, the more distance there is between us, and the harder it is to bridge that from both sides and to say that we're in this together. The personal story is simply to say, at some point, you need to stop saying, what can we do, and say, what can I do? And when it comes to what I can do, it's not a big thing. It's not a world-altering thing. It's just what I can do. Last week, my wife and I were talking about Christmas presents, extended family Christmas presents, and we decided that where practical for those who live close enough, what they were getting for Christmas was PEI beef, and that we would be buying that from a PEI beef producer. So I think it was Tuesday night this week, I phoned a beef producer we know and said, we want to buy some beef for Christmas. I know if you get $1.10 a pound, that does nothing for you. What do you need? He said, I'd be happy with $1.75. I said, we're doing this for Christmas, so let's go $2 a pound. As a consumer, $2 a pound, that's a good deal for me still, yeah. As a consumer, a very good deal. There's no retail outlet I'm going to go in and they're going to say $2 a pound. So that's simply to say it's not what we can do, it's not policy, but at some level this is about humanity and it's about what goes on in our hearts and in our homes.
That was Nigel Weaver speaking at the public forum on the crisis in agriculture in Charlottetown, PEI. With all of this talk about heat waves, melting glaciers, and coastal flooding, it can be difficult not to think about climate change when you're filling up your car at a service station. Well, staff at the new Co-op Gas Bar in Carraquet, New Brunswick, say they've found a cure for that guilty conscience, an environmentally friendly gas station. That's what they call it, even though it's still pumping out that black gold we call oil. Susan Aitken went to Carraquet to fill up and find out if it's possible for a gas station to go green.
On one side of Carraquet's main street is a small, tired, and kind of rusty old gas station. Across the street, squeaky clean, bright and new, is the Co-op Gas Bar. But the massive tanker that pumps gas underground at the rundown station is the same kind Jeremy Peterson is unloading into the co-op's tanks. For some reason, though, the co-op makes him feel better.
Well, I'm glad they're going green. I'm glad to be able to haul in here in this nice facilities and stuff like that.
Co-op President Marcel Javi says it's more than just pretty to look at.
What is so special about this complex here is our gas bar is probably the most modern gas bar in eastern Canada.
And at a cost of $1.4 million, probably one of the most expensive. But it's what the Carraquet Co-op's 6,000 members said they wanted.
A co-op is owned by its members. And when your members tell you that they want you to be safe on the environment, so you got to listen. I mean, this is how you get to run a successful co-op. If you listen to what your members are asking for, they want you to be green, so you just turn and you get green. That's all you have to do.
It's actually a lot more complicated than that. For example, the underground tanks that hold all that gas, they're loaded with sensors hooked up to computers. And that is to avoid environmental damage from gas leaks.
Sometimes it would take you years to notice that, for example, you've got a problem. With these electronic sensors, as soon as there's something going wrong, you know. So you know exactly where the problem is and how to fix it.
Now that takes care of underground contamination, but what about at the pump itself? Who hasn't ended up with gas on their hands, the car, the ground at some point? Won't happen at this station, apparently, though.
You cannot have a spill at your car. The sensors in the machines are so sensitive. I mean, whenever you're full, you're full. You're not going to be able... Sometimes you want to tease your tank a little and put an extra, a little extra 10 cents or 50 cents in your tank. It's impossible here. I mean, when you're full, you're full. They'll kick off, and you won't be able to restart them because they're full.
Station manager René Chiasson says the idea behind a green station was to offset the environmental damage that gas bars can cause. He says adding up the little changes the co-ops made can make a big difference. The station's roof, for example. Its shingles are cedar and not asphalt. In 50 years, Chiasson says if there are no more gas stations, that wood can be used for something else. Look above the convenience store and there's something else green.
Come here. Here what we've got three panels. It's around 4 feet by 8 feet each. And
those solar panels produce piping hot water, and that gets used inside the convenience store, including for things like making coffee, though you get it in a paper cup, for now anyway.
Every time they're going to come here for a coffee cup, we're going to give them a sticker. After 10 stickers, we're going to give them a hard coffee cup to make sure that they don't use that cup, paper cup, to do pollution. And we're going to recycle our hard coffee cup. And we're going to ask customers to use that cup.
Drivers, of course, can still get that cup at a drive-through window. If they do come inside, though, the sidewalk will be ice-free and the store cozy and warm because both are heated using geothermal energy, bringing warm water up from 45 meters below the Earth's surface. Inside, customers can recycle their batteries or pick up a pop from the fridge that is cooled using the energy from those solar panels on the roof. Any purchases, of course, end up in a blue cloth recyclable shopping bag.
All the customers are pretty happy about that. We have all good comments about that. It's going to be easier to sell this thing to the young customer, the customer who's going to come in the future, because that gas bar, it fits for new generations. And if we do things for young people, they're going to be happy, they're going to support us. It's how it's worked.
Even the staff who work at the co-op seem convinced they are making a difference. Andrea Poirier says pumping gas at this station just feels better.
Well, I don't know. There's so much pollution and everything, you know, so whatever we can do, we do.
And apparently she's not alone. Hector Lozier is with the union representing co-op staff.
There's a lot of pride that I know, and I've talked to some of the employees. They're proud of this. Very happy with it, because today most of the employees have kids in school. They hear about it in school. They come home. Now, well, they can tell their kids, hey, look where the employer I work for, look what he's done. And I know they are proud. So
but for all its bells and whistles, the price per liter is the same at the co-op as across the street. Denis Saint-Pierre drives his car 200 kilometers a day and says he is consciously choosing this green station.
Et voilà.
Ça change pas le prix de l'essence. Non, ça change pas le prix de l'essence.
It doesn't change the price of gas. No, he says. It doesn't change it for now, maybe in 10 years. When the system is paid off, they'll maybe be able to drop the price of gas a little bit. For Sophie Thériault, gassing up here is about supporting an idea more than anything. It's a step, she says. Even if it is gas, it's a step forward with solar energy and geothermal energy. Already, they've started doing something. And if every business did this, it would be a big advantage already because it would be a little less pollution. The station's tanks are ready to handle biodiesel fuels. And Thériault says that's great, but it doesn't really help her right now. We need gas. We don't all have hybrid vehicles right now, she says, or have the means to buy a hybrid, so we don't have a choice but to buy gas. But if the business is already making efforts, well, that's very good. It's a very big advantage. But over several hours at the co-op gas station, it is clear customers are also making another choice. Most of the vehicles filling up are either SUVs or trucks. And in the end, what's coming out of the pumps is exactly the same as what's across the street at that old station. Jarvie admits the idea of a green gas station does sound like a contradiction in terms.
Contradictory, yeah, definitely, because usually when you talk petroleum, you talk pollution, you talk waste, and you talk oil, and you talk bad stuff. It is not 100%. You never can reach 100%, but we did the best that we could.
Whether that is enough to offset what's actually being consumed is another matter entirely, because right behind the co-op president, a massive motorhome rumbles up to the pump. It is the size of an 18-wheeler with a gas tank to match, says its owner, Jacques Haché.
Au prix qui est là, c'est 300 $ pour le remplir.
At these prices, he says, it costs $300 to fill her up. For CBC Radio, I'm Susan Aitken in Cataquet.
You're listening to the Maritimes This Week. I'm Nina Corfu. Tasers have been in the headlines for weeks, first in relation to the death of a Polish man at the Vancouver International Airport. Then another man died after being tasered by police in Halifax. The cause of death is still being investigated, but the incident has prompted Nova Scotia's Justice Minister to order a review of police use of the weapon, and New Brunswick is doing the same. Barry McKnight is Fredericton's police chief. He's also the president of New Brunswick's Association of Chiefs of Police. He spoke with Terry Seguin.
You met with the Public Safety Minister, John Foran, last week to talk about tasers. What did you tell him?
Well, we had a short meeting with a number of the chiefs of police in New Brunswick from those agencies that are currently deploying tasers, and we simply talked about training and usage statistics.
So it wasn't about whether we should use them or not use them.
Well, I can tell you that the position of the New Brunswick Association of Chiefs of Police is that individual agencies need to make those decisions as far as whether or not they're going to be deployed, and of course that has happened with the agencies that are using them, and that's the case here in Fredericton. We've certainly had a number of discussions around this issue over the last few weeks, but the discussions in Fredericton have been ongoing around tasers since this program was introduced with us back in 2004. So this is a long-standing issue that we've been looking at very closely for years.
What do you think about that statistic that says 19 people have died over the last 4 years after being tasered?
Well, first of all, I would say that it's a tragedy, and these incidents need to be investigated vigorously, and I think I've said in this forum a number of times the police, and in particular the police and their use of force, has to be vigorously scrutinized. But that statistic around the number of people who have died, I would also point out that in none of those cases is there evidence that draws a causal link between the use of the taser and the death of the individual.
But has there been, as far as you know, an independent scientific or medical assessment, not done by the people who make the tasers, but by an independent group that says, okay, they're safe to use?
When I look through this technical report from the Canadian Police Research Center, it's clear to me that there have been many studies around this that have been conducted by certainly agencies other than the vendor.
But what's wrong with having a moratorium on the use of the device until an independent scientific assessment is done? If there was a police vehicle, a certain kind of police vehicle, that had resulted in 19 fatalities across the country.
Well, first of all, there's absolutely no indication that the taser has resulted in the deaths, Terry. So what would be your question is, what would be the problem with the moratorium? The problem would be this. You remove this very important intermediate weapon. You remove it from being used by the people who need it. And again, if we look at the usage of the taser in different agencies around the country and North America, highly successful in the vast majority of circumstances when it is deployed.
Yeah, but so, for the families of the 19 people who have died, I mean, that's
Terry, again, the number of people who have died, in none of those cases has there been a causal link between the taser and the death.
Did you see the video of the Vancouver airport?
In each and every one of those cases, the cause of death was something other than the taser. So in many cases, the taser is very successful in resolving these critical circumstances, and in no case has it been found to be the cause of death. Did I see the video? Yeah, I saw the video. It's
what
very,
did you think?
Very, very, very upsetting.
Yeah, but you're saying that there's no link between tasers and the deaths. I mean, how could you look at that video and say there's no link?
Well, let me be very clear. I'm talking about the findings of pathologists and inquiries in deaths that have happened in Canada and elsewhere. There has been no finding of a causal link. Listen, is it right that there's a lot of attention being paid to this now? It certainly is proper and appropriate because the public needs to have confidence in the ability of the police to do their job. And that's one of the things that I want to make very clear. I'm concerned about the potential for the overuse of any type of weapon when our officers are doing their job.
Right. Let me interrupt you, though, because I have seen the reports that you're referring to. And it seems that not only – I'm not saying this is happening in Fredericton, but it seems that police officers are using them in situations that might not require deadly force. You know, someone doesn't get out of their car because they're stopped for a traffic infraction, and then they appear to be belligerent. They're not responding to instructions. So you reach in and you taser them a couple of times to get them out of the car.
Well, first of all, I would challenge the way that you have just described that, because I have reviewed every single case of taser use
sure.
in this city, and there is no case where somebody just simply appeared to be belligerent in their car. The case that you're referring to mm-hmm. is that there were at least two other officers who were unsuccessful in physically attempting to remove that person from their car.
But
so this is a person who's...
But here's the question. Is someone not getting out of their car in a traffic stop a reason to taser them?
Oh, listen. The taser use follows the National Use of Force Framework, and it can be introduced, depending on the circumstances, with active resistance. It is not only for lethal force situations because, Terry, when police officers encounter a lethal force threat, they do not resort to a taser. That's an inappropriate use of the taser. When they're encountering a lethal force threat, they turn to their natural response to that is to go to their sidearm, and that's the reason that it's issued.
What did they do before tasers?
They use their other intermediate weapons, collapsible
baton.
Okay,
so if there's a question about whether or not these are lethal weapons or not, why not resort to what you used to do before until some assessment can say they're perfectly safe?
Well, first of all, I think that the research, and I'm satisfied that the research is clear at this point, that we know that the risks of not having the taser available to our people are greater than the benefits. And that's based on the research that's available to us.
Okay.
And I think this is very important. There are fewer injuries to suspects and fewer injuries to police officers through using tasers. If we're using pepper spray, if we're using batons, we've seen videos where police officers are using batons, and those are disturbing videos as well, even when it's justified.
Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Barry McKnight is Fredericton's police chief. He's also the president of New Brunswick's Association of Chiefs of Police. He spoke with Terry Seguin. You've been listening to The Maritimes This Week, the best of CBC Radio on the East Coast. I'm Nina Corfu in Halifax. This program is only available via internet download or podcast. If you'd like to comment on what you've just heard, go to cbc.ca and click on Contact Us. Catch this podcast again next week. In the meantime, tune in to CBC Radio wherever you are.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.